I'm Bob Franklin. Thanks for joining me. This is Like It Is. Bobby Rush is a returning guest to the program. He's a two-time Grammy Award winner, Blues Hall of Famer, and 16-time Blues Music Award winner. Bobby is joining me by telephone. Thanks, Bobby, for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me, man. Glad to be here. You know, glad to be here.
Absolutely. So let's just start right off the bat. I know you got a new release coming out, or if it's not already out, talk a little bit about that release and what was the inspiration for it?
I guess lack of food and lack of money, I suppose. Being hungry and encouraged. I'm encouraged by my music thing I do. But music is what I love, man. It was by my writing. I've been writing like this for over 70 years, and here I am still writing and still enthused, still enjoying what I'm doing, man. And finally, I make a little bit of money now, just a little bit.
So let's go back a little bit and talk about those days when you weren't making money and how.
Do we have to go back that far?
Just so the audience can get an idea.
I know.
Go right ahead.
Well, my name is Bobby Rush. I'm from a little place called Homer, Haynesville, Louisiana. I left my little hometown in 1947, went to Pine Bluff, Arkansas with my father, who was a preacher and a pastor of a church. In fact, he was pastor of two churches. And from that 1950, really, when I put the first band together. And during that time, a few months before that time, I met Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, Jimmy Reed, Little Richard, and all the guys who was young like I was, Jane Brown. We all were the same year as a kid. We thought B.B. King and Muddy Waters was old. They were like 28 years old. That was old to us, you know. And I about to put my band together from that time to this time. I haven't regretted nothing I did other than, and when I first started, I was making a lot of money, man. Me and the band were making $7 a week. Not $7 a night, $7 a week, you know. And we split that $7 a week up about $1.50 a night. We're working 3 days a week. And from that time, I graduated to move to Chicago. Then I started making $15 a night, me and the band, which come to about $4.50 a night. Now, that was big money. Then in 1953 or 54, I went to Argo, Illinois, and the man was paying me $17.50 a night. And I was hiring B.B. King and Muddy Waters on a Wednesday night. Muddy Waters would work for me, and I would pay him $5.50. B.B. King was real high. He charged me $6.50. That was real.
Big
man,
money.
I couldn't afford him but one night, man. Come on. You know, M.O. Jane wanted $15 for the weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, $5 a night. Muddy Water wanted $5.50. He was $1.50 higher, you know. And B.B. King wanted more than that. He wanted $17 weekend. And I couldn't afford him, so I hired him one night at a time, you know, every Wednesday night. And I have a Bobby Rush and Muddy Waters. I reversed it. Still send Muddy Waters and Bobby Rush. They got my name because Muddy Waters is a big boy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be in that realm. So that's my first crack of trying to make big money when I'm making about $3.50, maybe $4 a night that time. That was a big deal for making $4 or $5 a week, you know. So that's my graduation for making money. So here I am. So since we're talking now, I know there's some young blues men, music men out there. So I'm encouraging, if you like what you're doing and good at what you're doing, stay with it. But because when I first started, the money wasn't the issue. It was about the love of it. The love of the music, man, because it wasn't that much money. So now if anybody listen to me and think they can hire me for a little bit of money, you can talk to me, but I doubt I'll do it. Because now it's about making a living out of it, you know.
So,
but you know, I just said that so we can kind of get off on the track of where Bobby Rush come from.
That's great.
Let me tell you that if you don't have a record straight, I've been recording this year for 71 years, and I recorded 419 records. The last past 2 weeks, I recorded a couple albums. They're not out yet, but when I finish them, I'll be at 441.
Wow.
441 records. That's why I recorded, but I released 419. And out of that 419, I've written everything but 9 of the songs.
That's what I wanted. Original. That's what I wanted to ask you. The power of ownership, the power of writing your own. How much, I know that's got to be powerful for you to write your own lyrics and all. Talk about how much of authority it gives you as a musician to write your own work.
Well, now it gives me some clout now, but at the back in the early 50s, I would kick through the wall because I was writing the song, wanted to say what I wanted to say, but record company and management didn't want me to say nothing other than what they tell me to say. I asked them and said, I'll tell me to do. And most of the time, they wanted me to do and say some of the things that they wanted me to say then. What I'm driving at now, that a lot of things have changed. But as a black blues singer, I see so many things remain the same.
Would you like to elaborate?
Because now you have the management let you do pretty much what you want to record, but they still won't let your booking agent book you in certain places, so you can't sing the song that you wrote in certain places now still. You got to be so careful what you say and who you say it to and how you say it and approach you say it. Because as a black man, as a blues singer, there's still some thing that you dare not to do because you cross the fence, cross over, but I don't ever want to cross over and cross out my black people. But a lot of people, the point I'm getting to here is I hear a lot of black men saying, musician and entertainers, I'm going to record this because I think this is what black people like. I'm going to record like this and this song because I think it's what white people like. I'm in a position now, I record what I feel is good and hope everyone like it. It's not a black and white issue with me, not now. In the 50s, it was. I had to play what they would play on the radio, what the programmer record could play. And the programmer record only played what the man who owned the radio said wanted him to play. And I give you three guesses who was the owner. It wasn't black people on radio station. Very few at them days. You know, they were programming for the white people, and the white people tend to program what to play from the black people.
So you now have control. Control was the issue. It's no longer the issue with you now because you have control over your content.
I have control of my what I say and do, so, but I still got that. There are some things I won't say because I decide not to. I don't want to do that and say that because I'm a black man wants to say the thing, the kind of thing that want black people to look up to me. Not that I want to be a great leader, but I do want to educate people, let them know that certain things just ain't good for me. Now, I'm saying that because I know I love the rappers and the rapper love me. I respect them, respect what they do. And I don't talk about the having the pants down a whole bit. I don't endorse all the things they say and how their pants wear, how they wear their pants. But the one thing for sure, if we help them with what they're doing and engage in what they're doing, how they're doing, if you do that, the pants will come up with the knowledge. And that's what we have to do as men, as old men like myself. You have to draw a line, some of the things you say and don't say, some of the things you did in the younger day, you may not do it now. As Paul said in my reading, the book of understanding of it, when you learn better, you do better. So I learned some things and I learned to do better. I'm not talking about I've been all this righteous kind of guy, man. Come on, man, please. I do a lot of things I shouldn't do. I still look at big ladies. Hey, man, they'll kill you too. That wasn't drinking. But I say that and laugh about it because I'm not an angel. I just learn better and do better. And I'm telling young men, whatever you're doing, be good at what you're doing. And you don't have to be worried about nobody stealing your material. If it ain't worth stealing, it ain't worth having. Just be careful. The company you keep, you know?
So one of the things that I do want to circle back on and have you talk about, because James Brown. Talk about James Brown and your memories of him and the advice he gave him, you, and if you gave him advice and if you followed any of the advice that he gave you. Tell us about James Brown, the man.
Let me talk about James Brown. He was a businessman, but a cool heart, hit on for himself. James Brown was my friend, but James Brown was for James Brown. He may have did some things for a lot of people, but he didn't do that much for me other than make his mistake. And I learned from James Brown mistakes, because the mistake he made, I said, I'll never do that. So that was helpful to me. That was helping me because I was there to watch James Brown. We were all in the same age bracket. I watched him work. I watched what he went through trying to get over and how people try to put the foot on his neck to do me the same way. It did me the same way, still doing the same thing. But what I have done, I slipped through the crack. In this business, it's like when you mom and pop. What I mean by mom and pop, if you small enough to work for yourself, write for yourself, drive for yourself, set your amplifiers up for yourself, then you self-contained. But now you can make money with that. If you corporate with the big, I don't want to use name, but the big boy, the Elton John and all the big guys, if you corporate and got to all the managers and got all everything that you need, the bus, the whole bit, if you in that category, you can make money. But where you lose money when you're too big for one thing and not big enough for another. And that's why I was. I was too little for them to watch me, but I was too big for them to keep me down. So I slipped through the crack. They was, oh, there ain't nobody over Bobby Rush. Let me go. And they let me slip through the crack. I could write my song and do what I want to do with my song, and I control my destiny. Now I'm the oldest blues singer around, or close to the oldest one. If I'm not the oldest, I'm the ugliest. And so I can get my way in and figure my way out, and I can own my material. Now I'm the daddy. Now I'm the BB King of the me and Buddy guy, you know, for the black guys in the blues, that is, you know. When you get my age, you can kind of say and do what you want to do. And I'm not as hungry as I used to be, so I'm not bragging about that, but I'm blessed to be around still, can remember well, and God had given me enough gift and enough of help to put one foot to fall in front of the other and walk pretty decent. So I thanks put it well, and I'm trying to make me a living, to take care of my family, and do some things I should have done, I wish I could have done when I was a young man. So that's where I stand.
Hey, baby, is he gone yet? Love, I want you to know I'm a love of a child. I'm a Scorpio. Bobby Rush is my name. Funky music, that's my thing. Making love to my woman is my thing. Okay. I'm a undercover lover. I'm a undercover lover, yeah. I'm a undercover lover, dog. Undercover lover, yeah. I am an undercover lover. Do all my work under the cover. When you see me coming, radio, when I if you need some loving, I won't pass you by. If you need some loving, girl, just wave your hand. I'll be your lover and your back your man. I'm a undercover lover. I'm a undercover lover. Well, I'm a undercover lover. Yes, I am. I'm a undercover lover. Well, I am a undercover lover. Do all my work under the cover.
You're listening to the Public Affairs program, Like It Is. My guest is Mr. Bobby Rush. You heard a portion of his song, Undercover Lover.
So, was James Brown too big at the wrong time or the right time?
Oh, yeah. So he was in the head of his time. He was in his time. He got cut off at the pass. Let me tell you this while we're talking now. I know somebody's going to call me about it, but they can call me. I was with Sam Cooke when he was a young man. Sam Cooke died for what I stand for and what I believed in, because he was this, I'm just mentioning a few guys. Martin Luther King died for what I stand for and what he was trying to do for himself, his people and other people around him in that category who need the help. Because he always spoke about the sick need the help, not the well. I said that to let you know that all these things that he was trying to do, I was trying to do. Now we're going to find out a few years later, or could be hundreds of years later, that Michael Jackson just didn't die. Prince just didn't die. I, Bobby Rush, slipped through the cracks. No one would expect me to be here now, doing what I'm doing, and in control of what I do, as I am now.
Bobby Rush.
I slipped through the cracks.
So since you've slipped through the cracks and you're on the other side now, what is your plan going forward to empower young blues musicians, young individuals? What's your plan?
My plan is to do all I can while I can. There will come a day I cannot do, then I won't regret what I did not do. So at this time, I'm trying to put my body, my mind, my thoughts, and speak the issue that people want to hear is good for them. Because one thing for sure, we as a black race can't do everything that we want to do. Because I came up the time where there was a Chitlin Circuit, and people started writing about the Chitlin Circuit. And who was writing about the Chitlin Circuit wasn't black people. It was white people writing about the Chitlin Circuit. And the Chitlin Circuit wasn't just a juke joint, just a place you dance. That's what we worked for on the weekend, man. We worked all night long for chitlin. That's a hawk intestine, guts. And we will, man, sometimes fix a full plate. We'll eat one plate and sell the other two, other three for 25 cents a piece. That's 75 cents a night. He will fix us one hot dog to eat and one hamburger to eat. Then we will fix the other to go home. We will sell them. So I'll sell two hot dogs, one hamburger a night, and three chitlin plates. And I make me $1.50 to $2 a night, every night, selling my food that we work for him. That was my pay, the Chitlin Circuit. That's where it come from. People don't talk about it. That's where it come from, chitlin, man. You play for food. If you didn't have no, you couldn't go to the hotel. You had to find your a lady that likes you or you like them, whatever it was. Most of the time, it was the little welfare lady. You take advantage of her having some food for her children. You get a plate. You get your plate from them, and you sleep in her bed, and you do what you have to do, and you go to the next town and do the same thing. There was no hotels, man. That was the life. Chitlin Circuit. Now the point I'm getting to is the Chitlin Circuit is still alive and well, but now it's owned by the House of the Blues. The House of Blues play everything but the blues, and black folk don't own it.
Talk about ownership and all. I think that's the point that you were making. In terms of...
Yeah, well, in 1954, I believe it was, I went to Chess to get a contract. Muddy Waters was there. Jimmy Reed was there. Bo Diddley was there. Lil Walter was there. Smokey Hall and John Lee Hooker. And Willie Dixon was all sitting there. There was a guy called Mel London. Mel London was... told me that I could come down and talk to Leonard and Chess, who were two brothers who owned Chess Records. I said, well, I'll come down. And when I walked in the room, I didn't know Muddy well. I hadn't met him a few times. But these were old guys. They were 28, 29 years old. I'm like 17, 18 years old. You know, they like grown men to me, and I'm like a kid. But they took a liking to me and welcomed me in. We were sitting there talking. So there was a pamper on his desk. Said 10 and 208 was union. They were merging. And I thought they were two different unions, but I found out later it was one union, but they had a division inside the union to represent black musician on one side and the white musician on the other side. And the white musician had a better reputation that represent them better than they did the black guy. So I said, okay, man, it's going to be good. We're going to make a lot of money. By that time, one of the brothers, Phil, walked out and said, what y'all laughing about? And Bo Diddley laughed and laughed. I didn't know until later. He laughed. like I wasn't supposed to be saying what I'm saying. I didn't know that at the time. He said, Bobby Ray, he said, what y'all laughing about? He said, Bobby Ray said, put it on me, that the union is merging. He said, where he get that information? He said, off your desk right there, Mr. Field. So by that time, Leonard, his brother, walked out. He said, what you guys laughing about? Bobby said, the union is merging. He took the paper and threw it back to me. He said, boy, in that order, what did that say? And I read it to him. He turned around and told his brother, so we can't use that nigga because he can read. And I didn't get the job. From that time, I started trying to own my, had ownership of my material.
So
I went through hell and high water because I was like blackmail from the big boys.
So because
the news got around, because the news got around, Bobby Rush could read. Yeah, so you can, I couldn't get no contract.
Bobby Rush can read. Wow.
But I didn't know. I didn't know I was black. I didn't know. I didn't know. I'm just doing what I thought I was doing, something smart. That's why. But Bo Diddley, being an older man, older than I, 10 years old or more, he knew. Now, when I look back at that, this black man ain't supposed to be reading to these white people. He knew. But I was too young. I didn't, too naive. I didn't know that. I call myself letting them know, man, I'm happy to be in Chicago. I'm in heaven now, just coming from down south. Man, this is going to be right. We're going to get represented well by the union, the same union the white folks play. Damn, man, I was happy. I was like in heaven. I made them so we can't use that nigga. We can read.
And therefore you were a threat.
And I was a threat. I didn't know that. Then I went down on Rush Street. I was the first black man to hide on Rush Street in Walden. The place said no color allowed. And I went in there with three white guys and did an audition. So the guy was running the play was a Chinese guy. His name was Kunch. So Kunch told me, said, man, this is going to be great. We're going to integrate this play. Well, we'll be honest with you. I talked about it on a couple of interviews. I didn't know what integrate was because I wasn't educated. I just read decently, you know. And I said, integrate. I didn't know what integrate was. He said, man, and that Wednesday night I came back. It was on the Tuesday. Wednesday night I came back with three black guys with me. He said, where's the band? I said, right. He said, oh, God, you can't bring no black guys in here. You can't integrate this play. That's the second time I heard integrate. Now I'm curious about what integrate was. And I thought I was a little good-looking guy. I'm like 19 or 20 years old. Got my little mustache on, playing, telling everybody I'm 21. Wasn't but 20, you know. And I thought I was. Thought I was a sexy little kind of a guy. Thought I was handsome. And I thought he meant that if I was integrated, that he going to get a bunch of ladies and lock me up in a room with me and breed me. And I think I said, I could be a good integrator. That's how silly I was about it. I didn't know, man. I didn't know. But anyway, I laughed about it because I didn't know what integrate was. But anyway, he hired me and went in And I found out later who he was. That was Caesar Capone. He was Al Capone's brother. And he taken the liking on me, and he taken me under his arm. That was the start of me to own my material. Because when I walk into other places then to record, they thought I knew Al Capone. I didn't know nothing about it. Had no idea. But I used it to my advantage. They said, hey, they be whispering, here come the Al Capone boy. Here the Al Capone boy come. They get out the way. They would ask me, you got some money to pay? I said, let me talk to my boss. Okay, fine. I didn't have any boss to talk to. I would walk out sometime on the money and pay it when I could and when I wanted to. You know, I got things done, man. I used it to make money. They knew I was working for downtown, you know. They knew I was on Rush Street. Well, no black people working on Rush Street but Bobby Rush at that time. Later on, I got Sammy Davis Jr. came down Red Fox. And that's where it started from.
I'll resume part two of my interview with Bobby Rush next time on Like It Is. I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
Hey, baby. Is he gone yet? Make love. I
want you to know I'm a love of a child. I'm a Scorpio. Papa Rush is my name. Funky music, that's my thing. Making love to my woman through my pain. Okay. I'm an undercover lover. I'm an undercover lover, yeah. I'm an undercover lover, dog. I'm an undercover lover, yeah. I am an undercover lover. Do all my work under the cover. When you see me coming, radio, when I if you need some loving, I won't pass you by. If you need some loving, girl, just wave your hand. I'll be your lover and your backyard your man. I'm an undercover lover. I'm an undercover lover. Well, I'm an undercover lover. Yes, I am. I'm an undercover lover. Well, I am an undercover lover. Do all my work under the cover.
Hey, baby, is he gone yet?
What?
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.